I'm Tass Mellis of The Starters.
This is Ben Golver with the Open Floor Podcast.
Hi, I'm Kristen Ludlow from NBA Inside Stuff.
I'm OG Anunoby of the Toronto Raptors.
Hey, I'm Elena Donon, and welcome to the Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Double Clutch Podcast. I am one of your regular hosts, Nick Whitfield, and I'm joined by Kirk Killick, making the magic happen. Hello to you, Kirk.
Look who it is, everyone. It's only me.
And I do have a guest today, but I will get to him later. First of all, I want to jump straight into Around the Association. Now, a little bit different tonight. Other than try and fill an entire off-season's worth of news into this segment, I'm actually going to do something of a Double Clutch update. If you're a regular listener or viewer, then you may have noticed over the off-season that Double Clutch took a hiatus of sorts. You may have been sad about this. You may have enjoyed the space away from us, but that would make us very sad indeed. But if I can keep it 100 for the start of this show, I want to be very open and transparent with what's happening at Double Clutch currently, what you can expect moving forward in the near to mid future. Our time off over the summer was partly down to some of us feeling a little bit burnt out with everything that's entailed in keeping the behemoth that Double Clutch has become running. It was partly not wanting to do shows for the sake of shows with reduced news and stuff to react to over the off season. Double Clutch is one of, if not the longest running NBA podcast in the UK. As many of us have progressed into more senior jobs and as real life adult commitments have become more significant, it's become more and more difficult for us to keep every aspect of Double Clutch running as it has done for so long. We've also had something of a changing of the guard at Double Clutch. Regular contributors Hugh Hopkins and Josh Coyne recently decided to take a step back from Double Clutch to pursue other things and free up the time. Matthew Wellington, a Double Clutch founder and legend of the show, who listeners will probably never even know the full extent of the work he's put into DC behind the scenes over the years, with the website, maintaining audio quality on our podcast, and the editing, design work, and so much more. Matt is really focusing his time professionally currently, and hasn't had the same amount of time as previously to put towards Double Clutch. We do hope to have Mr. Wellington back one day soon. Mike Miller, a stalwart and absolute anchor of the show for many years, is admirably and quite rightly focusing on being a dad for the time being. We're hoping to have Mike back whenever he's ready. Tom Hall of Fame has also been struggling for time lately. So, well, in terms of main contributors over the past few years, that kind of just leaves me. So, unlucky folks. First of all, I'd like to, on behalf of everyone at Double Clutch, thank Josh and Hugh for everything they've done over the years. Both are incredibly knowledgeable and gifted basketball storytellers. Double Clutch has been very lucky to have these guys. I can't state enough that if you don't already give those guys a follow on all of the social medias, check out on the Double Clutch site and elsewhere the work these guys have produced, because you definitely will not be disappointed. So let's talk near term. We're kicking off the season tonight. I'm actually lucky enough to be going on holiday for the next couple of weeks, so there's a real chance we may miss a couple of weeks, but I promise we'll be right back and we'll build up the consistency that you're used to. I'd also love to get more of the UK basketball community directly involved in Double Clutch. I love to hear the stories about how people get into the game, how they find their favorite teams, their personal connections to the game. So if you feel like you'd like to be a guest on the show and have a chat with me, or maybe even be a bigger part of Double Clutch, we'd love to hear from you. And if you're watching live rather than listening to audio after the fact and you saw the start, you may have noticed I'm seemingly sat here about to talk to myself for an hour. But believe it or not, we do actually have a guest tonight. We discovered last minute he doesn't have a camera. So unfortunately, it is literally just my face you're going to stare at. Kirk is slightly larger now with the new set. I'm to welcome the most notorious fantasy basketball coach to have ever graced the Double Clutch NBA Fantasy League. Hearts around the UK collectively drop when they see his name appear in a trade request. I took perverse enjoyment at pipping him to a Giannis jersey from Hoopin and Luton as he dallied on his purchase decision like Mike Miller did the time I pipped him to a jersey too. It turns out I may just be a terrible person. But I am, of course, referring to huge Milwaukee Bucks fan Richard Hunt. Welcome to the show, Rich. How's it going?
I'm well, thank you. How are you, Nick?
I'm very, very good. So let's hear a bit more about you. Tell me a bit, like, how did you get into basketball? I know, like, you've mentioned before you lived in Australia and stuff. Did that play a role, or how did you get into the sport?
It started, honestly, with my family. My family would occasionally watch the games while I still lived in the UK originally. Don't know why I was up so late, but I did. And to be honest, it kind of became more of a hobby when I grew up. I got into more of like following basketball, and then I moved to Australia. It was a lot more easier for me to watch games because it was early in the morning. I could watch games before school, and I could watch like the Bulls and stuff like that. But that was like, I think that was the 2012-2013 season that I really got into it. So I watched a lot of the Heat, I watched a lot of the Spurs, the Bulls. It was just amazing, honestly, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I've noticed whenever I've been in Asia, for example, my wife hated me on our honeymoon. We were in Vietnam, and the such convenient NBA tip-off times meant I watched a lot of NBA basketball on our honeymoon. So I can completely get that. And you're a Milwaukee Bucks fan, which is really interesting because, and it may be age correlated, but I don't know many Bucks fans. So how did the Bucks become your favorite team?
Honestly, it was a bit weird for me. In as I said, like the 2012-13 season was really weird for me because obviously the Spurs, the Heat, the Bulls, for some reason in Australia, they were showing a lot of box games randomly because obviously it's an Eastern team. They obviously chose the more earlier games. And yeah, I just watched a lot of them. And I kind of had the opportunity to pick between obviously the Lakers, the Bulls, the Celtics and stuff like that. But I don't know, like something inside me kind of wanted to choose a team that was a little bit smaller, like watch the growth of that team over the years. And, you know, It's nice to be able to watch a team for almost like 9 years and eventually win a title as well. It's incredible. It's such a
I can imagine. I mean, pre Giannis, obviously they had the roster I always talk about because I loved it so much with Glenn Robinson and Ray Allen and those guys back in the day. But between Giannis and that team, there was a real kind of it was impossible to imagine the Bucks winning a championship, pretty much. So, yeah, it's incredible when a franchise like that is able to win. Were there any players when you were first getting into the Bucks that like were your favorite players at that point?
Monte Ellis, easy. He was amazing. In that 2012-13 season, he was the point. I think he was the point leader for the team. I might be wrong, but yeah, it was just great player. One of my favorite players on 2K as well. I still use them to this day, occasionally.
I think one of the best things you can say about Monte Ellis, to his credit, is there was a real genuine time where the Warriors weren't sure if they should build around him or Steph Curry. So he made scoring look easy. I love that guy.
Definitely.
So let's get into last season in particular. One of the reasons I wanted to get you on the show is, well, I mean, we've already mentioned it. The Bucks won a championship last season. Can you talk a little bit about like what that experience as a Bucks fan was like, going from obviously with Giannis having blossomed into either the best or like very near to being the best players in the NBA, the franchise actually building a team around him, and when did you really think, at what stage of the season did you think, do you know what, we actually really might win in the season?
Never.
Really?
Honestly, I never, it was such a weird, because last season...
Even after beating that, in that Nets series?
The thing is, I feel like we were a little bit shaky against Atlanta. Atlanta was such a force coming up against Philly. They demolished Philly. Simmons was a laughing stock, who obviously was one of the best big point guards in the league. They beat the Knicks convincingly. It was a weird feeling for me, and I felt like we won the Nets game just by luck. going into the Atlanta series was such a weird feeling for me. And then I knew that we were coming up against the Suns, who would, you know, come beating the Lakers in the first round, beat LeBron's first round record. And it was insane. It was such a weird season. And it started off with Giannis not signing the contract as well, which was terrifying for me. And then obviously we signed Drew Holiday, which obviously changed everything, and the team just gelled. And yeah, it was so nice to beat the Suns in the finals, to be honest. I didn't feel like it was real. It was so weird. So weird.
And looking at how the Bucks have started this season, you've got Brook Lopez struggling with a back injury, hasn't really contributed very much. DiVincenzo, a key contributor, again, struggling. There's some real like key players missing, and yet it feels like the Bucks haven't really missed a trick since winning the championship. They've just been on a roll. So do you think the Bucks are the favourites this season?
No, I don't think we are. I think Brooklyn will always be the favourites just because of that team. It's just so deep. They just, as much kind of a slow start they had so far, we beat them, not convincingly, but I just feel like people like Patty Mills, if Patty Mills eventually starts, I feel like that team could be insane just from how good he's shooting the basketball at the moment as well. KD is proving that he's still the best basketballer on the planet. Harden obviously is getting used to the new foul rule as well, and he's got a limit on his points as well. I think he's now averaging more like 20 points a game rather than maybe around 30. But yeah, I just feel like the Nets are just another level over the Bucks, but I don't know, maybe that Bucks culture will push it over again for us, and it's just, yeah.
Mike Miller in the chat, don't want to overstep the mark though, like KD, after calling out Matt Hardy, UK Nets fan, who I know is in the stream at the start. Is he still there? I think so. But who also is, I'm sure, delighted to hear you saying the Nets are probably the favourites in your opinion. So I mentioned that the Bucks are still rolling. And who do you think are the kind of undersung heroes in this team? Outside of, like, obviously we know Middleton, we know Holiday. They were huge parts of last season. Is there anyone this season that's caught your eye who you think may play a big role in the Bucks' success this season that maybe people aren't talking about?
There's two. Jordan Nwora has really been impressive so far. He's got some really good blocks in the past few games. I think yesterday he got a really good chase down block. I think he got two against Brooklyn, and he's showing to be a really good defensive player. Grayson Allen as well is starting to get a little bit more of a groove as well, and he's starting to shoot the three, and I think he's making a really good example of maybe becoming a starter over Dante DiVincenzo eventually as well.
I was actually going to say that as well. I think Allen has been a really good addition to the team, and he's actually, the reason you haven't missed DiVincenzo is largely because both him and Pat Connaughton, I think, have kind of filled that void completely almost.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like he's a better shooter as well than Dante, and I think that's something that we really missed, and obviously not relying on Chris and Drew and Bobby and Brooke is obviously really good, and having a designated shooter is a nice thing. So
Jordan Nwora, I am delighted, I'm delirious to see him playing this well, because I have been writing his name furiously into our Discord, which if you're not a member of, and you're listening to this, you should join, about how I've seen him play for Nigeria so many times and how good he is. And all he needed was an opportunity, and he's actually getting that opportunity this season. So he can really shoot the ball as well. So he's a really, he adds a lot of depth, I think, to the Bucks.
Definitely, I agree. He's just going to improve as well, especially with the more minutes he gets. I think he's averaging like 20 minutes a game, which he completely deserves right now.
And okay, let's move away from the Bucks. There was a super controversial topic that emerged a couple of weeks ago. The NBA, to celebrate its 75th anniversary, announced a list of the NBA's greatest 75 players. Now, at no point do they define what greatness means. And very strangely, if you looked at who was able, who the voting panel was for this list, many of the players eligible to be on this list were actually voting for the players who made up this list. So there were, right from the outset, there was quite a lot wrong with this move from the NBA. But anyway, I think it served its purpose. It caused up it caused a lot of debate, and everyone was furious their favorite didn't make it, or someone made it who shouldn't, and all that sort of stuff. So what was your reaction when you saw the list?
Firstly, I really do like the idea of the NBA 75. I think it's a cool way to celebrate the league in such a grand scale. But obviously, there was going to be a situation where people were going to be snubbed. And a lot of great players got snubbed. Like, just to mention, I have a list of people who got snubbed who probably should have made the team. So obviously, Kyrie Irving, Dwight Howard, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, Alex English, Klay Thompson, Pau Gasol, and T-Mac all didn't make the list. Obviously, there's arguments for all of them for not making it, but I feel like at least maybe Tony Parker or Manu Ginobili should have at least been in the 75, to be honest with you.
Well, the thing that annoyed me as well is they, in some ways, they did cheat because it was actually 76 in the end, the list. It wasn't even 75. They had 70. They didn't even like force the voters to choose between the two at the end who were tied, which annoyed me.
It was the 76.
I'm not sure they revealed the order of it. Maybe they did and I just didn't see it. But two players were tied to make it as the 75th based on the votes. And so they just put 76 in. So that was pretty annoying, as in, like, you may as well put all of the deserving players in
exactly.
Then. If it's not actually going to be the number, then it may as well be 100 players. But if you're watching along, thank you, Kirk. He's put the list up there. And let's pick apart the guys who you said should have made the list, in your opinion, or at least should have been heavily considered. And let's break it down a little bit. Who did you say?
I said Kyrie Irving first.
Okay, what is your thinking on Kyrie Irving? I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just curious what your thinking is.
Personally, I think Kyrie Irving is a generational talent. I feel like he's an example basketball player at times, and as much shit as he gets, he deserves to be on a list like this just from his ability. He won the Cleveland Cavaliers their first title in a long time, and I just feel like, I don't know, it was just so weird not seeing Kyrie on that list, but seeing someone like, this is really like hitting it like myself here, but seeing Giannis on the list, he's just won his first title, and yes, I do think Giannis is one of the best players of all time, but does he deserve to be in the top 75 of all time, even though he's literally not even really in his prime yet? And he's just won his first title.
I think the biggest comparison for Giannis being on this is in 96 when they did the 50 greatest players for the 50th anniversary, and Shaquille O'Neal made it, who, it was very early in his career at that point, and they projected forward to say, okay, there's no doubt this guy should be in this list. And I think that's what they've done with Giannis there. But yeah, I do agree with you on Kyrie. He's one of the all-time greatest ball handlers, one of the all-time greatest finishers around the rim for a small guy in terms of his the layup package he has and the like creativity. And he is a career 40% three-point shooter as well. It's like the guy, there's no way you can tell me in terms, again, this comes back to like, they're not defining what greatness really means, because there's no way on earth you could tell me Kyrie Irving is not one of the most 75 most talented basketball players of all time. So yeah, totally agree with Kyrie. Who is next on your list?
Dwight Howard.
Dwight Howard is a controversial one, and he has one of the weirdest NBA careers of all time in terms of if his career had happened, had he joined the NBA like 6 or 7 years earlier, and he was like in the prime kind of era of the center as his whole career, then Dwight's name is probably talked about very differently.
Yeah, I agree. It's a very weird one. Obviously, he won his first title with the Lakers like near the end of his career, but he's like, how many DPOIs did he win? Like 3 or something like that? Was it 3 DPOIs?
I think it's 3, yeah.
Yeah. Did he win an MVP as well?
No.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think he deserves it. He's one of the best defensive centers of all time.
There was a long stretch in the NBA where he was unquestionably the best center in the league. And I mean, he beat LeBron James in a playoff series as the best player on his team. He was a big part of the Orlando Magic team that went to the finals, was a big part of inspiring small ball around. So like basically only having one big guy on the team and surrounding him in shooters with Turkoglu, Rashard Lewis, Jameer Nelson, and all of those guys on that Orlando team. Redick was there. And it's hard to think that there's a lot of recency bias in this, both in some of the inclusions, but in Dwight's case, in the exclusion, because there's also personally, I think that, and again, I'm heavily biased and skewed by the fact that the people from the earlier period of the NBA, I didn't actually watch play, but there's no doubt in my mind that if you picked up prime Dwight Howard and you put him in 1960s NBA, they would have said, oh my God, this guy is not a human being.
Yeah, they're going to probably call him the second coming of Bill Russell, probably.
Exactly. So that has to count for something in my mind. So yeah, no arguments for me on Dwight.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely.
Who was next on your list?
I'm going to put these two together because obviously they made an absolute dynasty together. Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili.
Yeah, and I completely agree. And I'm going to come back to this topic where some people's inclusion or exclusion, I feel like, was heavily based on almost like a kind of luck where they ended up being on a team where, in Manu's case, he was perfectly happy to be the super professional, be the sixth man for those teams a lot of times, and not put up the kind of numbers he was more than capable of as a player had he played for a non-Popovich team that also had all those other great players on it. But the thing, people will point to like their international credentials as well. And the NBA being such a global league where the role of like Tony Parker and Manu in their respective countries, inspiring players thinking that their NBA dreams can become a reality, cannot be understated, I don't think. And yeah, both those guys in my book should have made it.
Definitely, I agree. 100%.
Who's next?
Alex English.
Go on.
He's kind of an icon for the Denver Nuggets as well. I don't know that much about Alex English, to be perfectly honest with you, but he's obviously one of those names that are compared to people like Carmelo. And yeah, when you think of early Denver Nuggets, you think of Dan Issel, you think of Camby, you think of Alex English. So I feel like, again, maybe this is a not very good way to look at it, but he is probably one of the most famous Denver Nugget players to ever play for the organization.
Yeah, I get it. I can't get fired up about the guys I didn't actually watch play. So you'll get no fiery argument arguing for him from me. Who's next?
Klay Thompson.
Go on.
He was the Robin to Stephen Curry's Batman. He has the record for the most three-pointers in a game ever. He made just a dynasty in the Bay Area, and he's probably one of the most iconic. Well, he's easily one of the best three-point shooters of all time. If people like Reggie Miller has made the list, him being in a massive, like, iconic three-point shooter from his era, never won a title, always lost to MJ. Why can't Klay Thompson get in the list for winning? How many titles has he won with the Warriors? What, four? Is it five?
I don't think it's five.
I think it's four.
Yeah. The thing, the other thing I'll say about Klay is he is the... it sounds like a... not how I mean it necessarily, but the 3-and-D player is like, for the past like 15 years in the NBA, is something that all teams want. It's like a template of a player, basically, that is ideal because it can fit around any other kind of star. If you've got a star big man, 3-and-D player, awesome. If you've got a point guard who's incredible, 3-and-D, amazing. And Klay Thompson is literally the best player I've ever seen who could also be described as 3-and-D. And the fact he could literally be picked up and planted on any other NBA team and just be just as incredible, because the guy can score like 30 points in a quarter with like barely bouncing the basketball. He, like, his usage doesn't even need to be that high to score that amount. And that's a, like, a really unique skill in itself. And so, yeah, Klay should have made it.
Has also one of the most iconic moments in finals history, absolutely fucking up his leg and then coming out, shooting his free throws and coming back to the locker room. I just think he's one of the best three. I don't know. I love Klay Thompson, if you couldn't tell.
Okay, just get far away with who else you had on your list.
Pau Gasol and Tracy McGrady.
Okay, no arguments for me on either of those guys. Tracy McGrady, if you didn't watch prime Tracy McGrady play, I am not lying when I tell you he was offensively better than Kobe Bryant for a number of seasons. And people may disagree with me there, but I watched it and that's what I think. And he is one of the most unstoppable offensive players in his prime, I think, has ever played in the NBA. So it's nuts he's not on there.
Nope.
Next.
Let's get to the more controversial bit. We're saying these guys should have made it, but that means some of the players on this list shouldn't be on there. And did anyone stand out to you as players who shouldn't be on there, or that... And let's preface this. We're not coming out with hot takes here. Anyone on this list or within a shout of getting on this list is one of the greatest players in NBA history. We are not saying these are bad basketball players, but there can only be so many on the list. So did anyone stand out for who you probably would have taken off in favor of one of those people you talked about putting on?
This is the difficult part. Like, to be honest with you, I don't think I would be able to, because all of them are just so iconic.
Let me jump in then. Let me help you with this. So, mainly because Mike Miller is in the Twitch, I'm going to say Michael Jordan. Obviously, that's a joke. here's one. And actually, no, I'm going to pair two players here where I think if they played for different teams, they wouldn't be on this list. And again, I'm going to repeat my preface for this segment. I'm not saying these are bad players. I'm just saying, I think Anthony Davis, if he's still a New Orleans Pelican and they're probably not much better than they currently are, because let's face it, the Pelicans did nothing while he was there, there is not a single chance he is on this list. And does it mean he's a great player because he changed team and played with LeBron James? I'm not...
I see what you mean, yeah.
That's why he stood out to me when I looked down the list. And similarly, and this is a bit more controversial, James Worthy, for similar reasons, where unbelievable transition player, one of UNC's greatest ever college basketball players. But if he wasn't a Showtime Laker and he didn't get all of those runs to the finals, and let's face it, he was the third banana there. He is one also where I think maybe perceived a little bit differently. Not that he would be thought of as a worse player necessarily. He just may not have made this list. And one more that stood out to me when I looked at it is Mr. Bill Walton, who he had a very short peak where he was absolutely unstoppable. But he didn't play that many games in the NBA. And the reason I bring up him is if you're going to allow players who had a very small peak where they were unstoppable, I don't understand why the same logic would not be applied to Derrick Rose, say, or Tracy McGrady, or who also had those kind of like ridiculous peaks. Maybe they didn't win trophies in those seasons, and maybe that's the difference there. But let me put it this way. There was a lot of talk about Jokic being left off this list because it's too early in his career. But let me put it this way. He's 26 years old, and in probably 10 games time, by the time people listen to this, if they're not listening to it live, so it's currently 11 games, he will have played more regular season NBA games than Bill Walton. So, and I think that has to count for something.
Definitely.
So again, not to say Bill Walton wasn't like absolutely ridiculous in the few years he was healthy and in his prime, but the fact he played so little basketball overall has to count for something in my mind. So anyway, that is my controversial. If I was to remove people in favour of other players, that's what I would have done. Mm. Okay, let's move on. This season, I asked you to talk about three teams that have stood out to you for them being interesting in some way, as in like maybe they're better than you expected, maybe they're worse, or maybe you just spotted something that you're going to be watching coming up.
I'm Harry Harrison is going to love me for saying this, but the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Okay, what is it about the Timberwolves that's caught your eye?
They just look like, obviously, because Kat is actually healthy and he's playing really good basketball. Anthony Edwards is proving to be an amazing number one pick. They are beating like really good teams as well, and I feel like, because I think we have the Timberwolves tonight again, well, it's Bucks versus Timberwolves tonight, and I am genuinely quite interested to see how that game goes, because I feel like they could be a sneaky playing team this year, definitely, if they keep going, they keep kind of keeping that flow, the offense is continuing to look nice. I don't know. I think there can be a really sleeper pick for the playing team this year. Definitely.
And I'm going to repeat a story I always repeat because I find it incredibly interesting and I'm curious to see how this unfolds, in that Chris Finch, the Minnesota Timberwolves coach, he was actually a BBL coach and at the same time as Nick Nurse. And generally, Chris Finch was considered the better of the two coaches. Nick Nurse was probably the better recruiter in that time, in that he got better kind of US talent coming into his teams. But Chris Finch was actually considered the superior coach. So they potentially have a real special coach in Minnesota as well. So yeah, I can see that. Who was your next pick?
The Charlotte Hornets.
And why Charlotte?
Honestly, I absolutely love LaMelo. I love Miles Bridges. It's just a fun team to watch, isn't it? It's a young team. They're playing great basketball. Is it the first time in franchise history that they've won four games in a row without losing?
That is definitely not true.
Is it not?
No, it can't be.
I read something.
I haven't fact checked it, but that literally can't be true, because they used to be good many years ago. They just haven't been good for a long time. So I can't imagine they've never won four in a row.
Someone may have to fact check that, but I read something on Twitter that was the case. But yeah, they look really good. I think their offense is nice. They just look fun, and I feel like they're going to really shock people this year. Definitely.
Yeah, Miles Bridges has looked incredible. His development, obviously, you can't talk about this team without talking about LaMelo. That goes without saying. He's been unbelievable. And it's really hilarious looking back, actually, how I'm very confused why there's flying pants on fire.
That's what
on the
I
screen.
Was thinking.
if you're listening to the audio version of this, we sound insane. But okay. But yeah, it's really funny actually to think that there was any doubts at all about LaMelo's ability to play in the NBA, looking at him now, where he's actually quite a unique player. And the other person who I've enjoyed watching, not only because he's on my fantasy team, but Gordon Hayward looks incredible.
Definitely. Mason Plumlee also has fit into that team really well as well. Great team. It's just great team in general.
Also on my fantasy team. So I have also enjoyed the Hornets immensely. Who's your third team that's caught your eye?
The Chicago Bulls.
Okay.
When the trades for this team came through, I was like, this team's going to be a problem. Like, they are going to be really good. They have an amazing coach as well. Lonzo just looks amazing, is running the team really nicely. Zach LaVine, who I think just has a thing. Does he have a finger injury now? I'm pretty sure he has a finger injury, but he's going to play through it, has looked amazing as well. DeMar DeRozan's fit into the team really nicely. Vucevic is doing Vucevic stuff as well. So it's just a great team. Honestly, I've really enjoyed watching them too.
So Chicago is also one of the teams I picked out. And here are the things I think about Chicago. So when I saw the roster they put together for this season, I saw the starting five and I was in love with it and thought, that's amazing. I can't wait to watch that. And then I started to question their depth a little bit, but Alex Caruso has been really, really good for them.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Their schedule so far has been incredibly easy. They're 4-0 as we record this, but they haven't played a good team yet. I think they've played the Pelicans twice without Zion. So that was two.
Well.
Yeah. And so they haven't been super tested. And if you look at their stats, they're among the leaders in three-point percentage as a team with some not historically great three-point shooters contributing to that. So that could mean one of two things. It could mean that players like DeRozan, like Lonzo, have actually improved, or that may correct itself over the course of the season. So those are things to look out for with the Bulls. And also coming up to play the Knicks, so probably a loss.
Definitely.
The second team I picked was the Cavs. And
yeah, definitely.
One of the things I was curious about was there was so much talk about Darius Garland coming into this season that I was expecting for him to just like put up insane numbers. And that hasn't quite happened. And Colin Sexton's also been really good. Ricky Rubio's probably like, strikes me as a really strange player in the NBA now, where no team seems to actually want him, despite him making every team he plays on a bit better. So that's a really strange one. And he was exactly what that team needed, because they're so young, and particularly in the backcourt, having Rubio as that kind of veteran playmaker allows the team as a whole to have a lot more coherence, a lot more shape. And Evan Mobley's obviously been incredible. I think it was on the Bill Simmons pod I was listening to where they referenced a stat that in four games, he's challenged 72 shots, which is, you look at him and he's incredibly long, but that is really impressive nonetheless. Kevin Love looks like he actually wants to be there again, which is nice. Jarrett Allen's playing incredibly well, which no doubt Nets fans will be a little bit sad to see. But yeah, the Cavs have been super fun to watch, and they are one of my guilty pleasures as I'm scrolling through League Pass, and I genuinely look forward to watching their games. The third team, and I'm going to be a bit more ambivalent about this team, but it's a bit of a train wreck and I don't know what to make of it, where OKC, they have so many draft picks. I don't get it, though. We've seen Philadelphia when they did the process. They got Embiid, they got Simmons, and has it worked? A qualified yes. They're kind of a contender, but they took some bumps along the way. Simmons currently is a bit up in the air as to whether he was worth all that tanking for. And yet OKC are kind of doing the same thing right now. And one of the reasons I don't quite get it is, and being a Knicks fan, what I am overly familiar with is, even in like one of the major basketball markets, if you get a reputation among players as somewhere where you're going to lose, as somewhere where if you're Shai Gilgeous-Alexander currently, you end up essentially like wasting years of your career. That stuff lasts a long time. And that kind of like PR among players and that brand building as a team, as a franchise, it can take a long time to get over. And so what are Oklahoma doing? Are they going to condense these like ridiculous number of draft picks they have into actual assets? Are they going to try and be a functional basketball team? Because right now they have a lot of like high ceiling, low floor guys, but I just don't get what I'm looking at when I watch that team.
Yeah. I really like Josh Giddey, to be honest. He looked really good. And I agree with you about Shai. He had a really slow start as well. I have him on my fantasy team, and he played really well yesterday because I think they were against the Warriors. But the issue with that is, I don't know, I feel like he deserves to be on a better team, to be perfectly honest with you. Definitely.
And I'm hoping they trade him for draft picks just for the lols.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, let's move on. I asked you to do the same thing with three players that have caught your eye for any reason this season so far.
Stephen Curry.
He's pretty good.
He is very good. He is.
Anything more on that?
He's probably the best player in the league right now, other than KD.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit disrespectful. The thing I hear most commonly currently is like, whichever way around you put them, Giannis and KD are kind of 1A, 1B subjectively. But it is a little bit disrespectful to leave Curry out of that conversation, in my opinion, just because the guy is nuts. We've never seen a player like that. He makes everyone around him better. You have to guard him from the time he crosses half court. And he's one of the most fun players to watch in the NBA. So, I don't know what else to say about Steph Curry.
I think he's a generational talent, and he will go down as one of the greatest players of all time. I think he will go down as the best point guard of all time.
Warriors also 4-0, so really curious to see if they emerge as genuine contenders come playoff time.
Definitely. I think when Klay comes back, that team is going to be bit of a hot take here. I feel like they're going to be a top three team in the West this year when Klay comes back. Definitely. Definitely, definitely, definitely.
My only critique with the Warriors is fantasy related, where I completely overreacted to first game and dropped no one in particular. I think it may have been Kenyon Martin Jr. Who has done nothing this year. But I dropped him for Bielitsa because I got carried away by the first game, and then he has not done anything since. although he looks like he fits well in the system, it was a bad move. Yeah. Okay, who's next on your list?
Miles Bridges.
Okay, we already talked about him a little bit and like how important he is to the Hornets' success. Anything to add on him?
I think he's going to win most improved player this year.
Yeah, that's a really good shout, actually. I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, I think might be looking at the odds on that, actually.
Definitely. Definitely.
Who's your third?
I chose, again, I feel bad for choosing this player, Lonzo Ball. I chose Lonzo Ball. Again, I've watched a lot of the Bulls this season, and he just looks improved. I feel like he's still got that playmaking, but he's improving the three. He's improving defensively. He's molded to the team very well. He's obviously, I don't know. I just really like Lonzo this year. Again, I feel like he could be a most improved player in that conversation as well. I also wanted to shout out Julius Randle as well, because he's also really improved as well. Really liking Julius Randle.
Yeah, he, as a playmaking forward, the fact that Knicks are so deep this season really helps him, because he's never in lineups where the only thing he has is like static shooters around him. He actually has people who can dribble and create. So that's really helped him and opened his game up, I think, quite a lot. Mm. Okay, my list of three players were, the first is Ja Morant, because that guy for a long time has been unmissable to watch. And this season, so far, he's averaging 35 points per game, which is nuts already. And likely, we have to assume he's not going to keep that pace up. But yeah, it's like, it's been a bit like, I saw a comment from Paul George saying that he guarded prime Derrick Rose in his first year in the NBA. And that's who Ja reminds him of. And that's, for a guy who won MVP that season, obviously with Rose, that's very high praise from a very good defender in Paul George as well. So, yeah, and he scores. He not only scores 35 points a game, but the most exciting 35 points a game you'll likely see from a player. My second player is Paul George, who I already mentioned, but he, in the absence of Kawhi this season, I was looking at his stats this morning, and they are eerily similar to the season that he personally referenced as his MVP season, despite not actually winning the MVP that season. But he was in the running for the award that year, and his stats this season so far are very, very similar to that. So if he keeps that up, again, it wouldn't be a surprise if he was at least in the conversation by the end of the season. And if the Clippers are obviously looking like they're going to be a playoff team and a threat in the playoffs. So Paul George was my second. And my third, and I'm incredibly curious to see how this guy plays out the rest of the season, if the team tries to like jump and sell high on this guy. And that is Harrison Barnes, who you look down the leading scorers in the NBA and you do not expect to see Harrison Barnes there. And yet that's exactly where he is. Let me dig up his stats so far this year, because I try and avoid watching Sacramento games unless it's against the team I enjoy watching. But I watched his first game, and then I've been hooked on Kings games ever since this season. So this season so far, 28.3 points a game, 10.3 rebounds. He's shooting 56% from 3-point line. Wow. This is attempting 9 a game. This is like insane stuff from Harrison Barnes. So the Kings really should try and trade him and sell high on him, because I would be gobsmacked if he kept that up all year.
Definitely. I also wanted to shout out DeJounte Murray as well on the Spurs. He's playing incredibly well as well. I think he got the, oh, it came out, it was a Spurs record for a triple-double, I think, yesterday as well. He's playing really good.
Yeah, I agree. And it's one of the few bright spots for the Spurs, who have a very young, very promising team, but going to be a little while before they're a playoff team, probably. And moving to the next segment, I've called this New Team Who Dis. And what I asked you was, who has it, of the players that have changed team, and there's been some real superstar names that have changed teams in the offseason, has anyone struck you as looking particularly good or particularly bad?
Patty Mills for the Nets. Yeah, just insane. He's acting like he's playing for Australia, was one of the things that one of the commentators said against the Bucks. And yeah, he's melded to the team really well. And was he on a record? He had the joint most threes in a row in Nets history or something like that. Was that the record? Yeah, insane.
I didn't see that. Impressive.
Yeah.
I also had Patty Mills, and his is not only because of his own play, but the obvious absence of Kyrie Irving this season so far. makes his acquisition look all the more crucial for that team. I also had, we talked about two of these players already, so I won't go into great detail, but Lonzo Ball, Rubio, and the last one I had on that list was Valanciunas, who has been an absolute monster this season so far. So enjoyed watching him. And moving on to the bad list, did you have anyone who has changed team and just it hasn't quite worked for you yet?
Sorry, I just wanted to go back to Patty Mills. I've just looked this up. Mills became the first NBA player to ever shoot a perfect 10 from 10 three-pointers.
That is incredible.
So, yeah, insane. Unimpressed, I'm going to say Kyle Lowry.
Okay.
I'm going to get his stats up right now. I looked at them before this. On a team that, honestly, I feel like he should be just absolutely dominating on, he is averaging 7 points a game, 1.5 rebounds, and 7 assists off 26.3 field goal percentage and 16.73 from three as well, which is just not Kyle Lowry, to be honest.
He's just have to think. The thing I think that may fix him is he shot the ball so poorly from three, and he's a good shooter on the whole and has been for years. So I imagine he's going to shoot the ball better. But yeah, he definitely hasn't been the Kyle Lowry we've been accustomed to seeing in Toronto for sure.
Definitely.
Did anyone else strike you on that list?
Not really. I feel like.
Okay. I have two. One. No one else will care about other than me, and that's Reggie Bullock, who is a huge part of the Knicks' success last season, moved to Dallas and in theory should have been a very good fit there, good defender, good three-point shooter, but so far Jason Kidd has seemed reluctant to really use him very much. There was a comment from a reporter in a press conference as well asking why Bullock had barely played in one of the games. And Kidd very sarcastically replied something along the lines of, I'm very sorry you thought he should have played more. So not the brightest look for Bullock after such a big season for him last year. And the last one, again, is a bit conditional for me, but and I think it's an obvious one, is Westbrook. And the reason I'd be worried about Westbrook is in the games he's played with LeBron, and it was, let's be honest, it was quite predictable. They're going to take a long time, or at least a little while, to work out how to play alongside one another. They're both obviously so high usage. Westbrook, he managed it in the end in Houston playing alongside Harden. By the second half of that season, he was actually looking very efficient and very good. So I wouldn't be surprised if Westbrook works it out, but the actual reality of what we've seen so far is Westbrook explodes and goes crazy in games that LeBron is not present in and looks like a shadow of who he should be in games where LeBron is there. So as of right now, not a great look for Westbrook, but that TBC on that one.
TBC indeed. I think
This is clearly my favourite segment of the show. We're moving to Nothing But Nick's Silly Nonsense.
Nothing But Nick's Silly Nonsense.
Okay, with Halloween upon us, I have a double-barreled nonsense question this week. And before I ask you the question, there is a correct answer to these, so I will judge you.
Okay.
So there's two questions. This is the first one. Which personality from the world of basketball do you think, if tasked with creating a Halloween costume from scratch, would do the best job and why? What would they dress as?
I didn't necessarily think. I may have thought about this question a little bit wrong. I said Kawhi. And you're going to be like, why? I feel like
he's Kawhi, a fun guy.
He is a fun guy, definitely. But I feel like he would pull off Michael Myers quite well.
Yeah, he doesn't say anything, so.
And yeah, I feel like he'd do the scary staring thing quite well.
I can see that. He's also got the perfect hands for wielding weapons of any description, so yeah.
I can see that. And secondly, if you personally had to dress as a personality from the world of basketball for Halloween, who would it be and why?
Well, I kind of, again, thought, obviously I don't have the height to be a basketball like player, but I have quite a large beard. So I have two from the basketball world and one from a movie that I enjoy, and they're a bit meme-y. I chose Jonas Valanciunas because I feel like the man has got a lovely beard. I said Chris the Birdman Anderson because I feel like I could pull off a beard and a mohawk. And finally, I said Bill Murray at the end of Space Jam. I feel like it would be a pretty nice. Cool Halloween costume.
Nice. Great answers. Unfortunately, I did say there was correct answers to these questions. And so now I am going to reveal that it was, in fact, a trick question. And the answer to both of these questions is, in fact, Boban. And in the first question, Boban would go as Boban. And in the second, I would go as Boban. So those were the correct answers to those questions. Better luck next time. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the Discord and what's been happening. It's all been go with, we've already been talking about a little bit. The Fantasy League has been pretty nuts and people have been kicking off about it already. We've yet to see a huge amount of trades. And let's talk about that. Why have you not been making your trademark trade requests?
I said at the start of the season that I would be a little bit more hesitant when it came to these kind of trades. I feel like people know me a little bit more. They know a little bit of how I work. I did offer a few trades. I offered Embiid for Giannis. I don't know if that was fair.
Big.
And I offered Embiid for, I think it may have been Luka.
These are juicy trades. I'm enjoying this.
They were declined. In due haste. But I am planning to maybe send a few trades in the next couple of days just to see how things are. I have openly said that Shai Gilgeous is on the chopping block. So,
wow.
Yes.
Okay. Another conversation point in Discord was we were looking at the all-time NBA scorers, and it was brought to everyone's attention that 7 out of 10 have played for the Lakers at some point in their career, and just kind of how that demonstrated that the Lakers have just had kind of unparalleled access to the best players in the league for most of the franchise's history, and that's why everyone outside of Lakers fans does not describe themselves as particularly fond of the Lakers. We did have a question this week, and it was from Matt Hardy, a.k.a. UK Nets fans, who asked us, outside of Kevin Durant and Harden, who will be the Nets' next most important player if they want to win the chip? And I am excluding Kyrie Irving from being the answer here in his some sort of potential change in the New York laws or him getting vaccinated. So any other Nets player?
I will tell you now, it will not be Nick Claxton. It will definitely be Patty Mills.
I think Mills is the obvious answer, so I'm not going to go with it. I'm going to go with LaMarcus Aldridge, who I actually jumped in Matt Hardy's Twitter. What do you even call them, the audio things in Twitter? I forget what they're called.
It's not... Well, obviously, Instagram Live have is.
Like, yeah, you know what I mean. Anyway, I jumped in his yesterday and I was saying how I think LaMarcus Aldridge might have a role to play. His game is kind of designed for the playoffs where he can create offense just by dumping it into him in the post. And Blake Griffin has looked a little bit ropey compared to what we saw from him in the playoffs last season. So. Him and Millsap providing that extra depth in the front court. Both of them are going to be important, but I'll say LaMarcus Aldridge. I'm wary we're a little bit over time, so let's get through this quickly. Games of the week to watch. We had to pick one each game that we're excited to watch this year. I normally try and avoid picking Knicks games, but I picked a Knicks game this week just because it's against the previously discussed undefeated Bulls, and it's going to be a good test for both teams, who are sitting in the upper places of the Eastern Conference, as though it's the 90s with the Knicks and the Bulls looking that good in the Eastern Conference. So that's on Thursday the 28th, 1 a.m. What game did you go for?
I went for the Timberwolves at the box tonight. Mentioned that I was really into the Timberwolves and obviously Box fan.
Just for anyone listening to the audio version of this, tonight is Wednesday the 27th, so likely already happened by the time you listen to this.
Yes, and also it's the meme of myself and Harry both supporting the teams as well. So,
and the early weekend tip, I always try and make an effort to watch these games on the Sunday where they have the early tip-off, because it is delightful not to feel excruciatingly tired at the end of it. And so what I'm trying to introduce to the show is just a very quick preview of... So this week it's the Kings at the Mavs playing 8:30 p.m. UK time on Sunday. And for me, I kind of already talked about it a little bit, it is the Harrison Barnes show. Will it continue? That's what I'm watching for. Anything you're watching for in that game?
The Luka show.
The Luke show, probably a bit more consistent, but yeah, I'm rooting for Harrison in this one. Okay, and with that we come to the end of the show. Thank you to new Discord joinees this week. Dwarf_Jeebus, great name. Tyler, aka Brooklyn Nets London. A new follower on Twitch, Too Frosty, thank you. And you can find us at Double Clutch UK on all of the socials. Do get involved on Discord. It's a fun community where you just get to talk hoops all the time. Thank you to Kirk, as always, for making the magic happen on this show. New set, new intro, everything looked perfect. Thank you so much. And as I mentioned, we may miss a couple of weeks now while I'm on holiday, but do not be alarmed. We will be back and we will be consistent as possible. So thank you, everyone, and goodbye.
See you.